Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of February 24th, and with me early, well, it was earlier when I was waiting, but now it's regular time on a Saturday morning, is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
Well, regular is relative, Einstein. I'm good.
Yeah, well, I would imagine a lot of people, because Japan doesn't have time zones, so the people who weren't out partying on Friday night are probably awake, and they probably will be awake by the time
the people who aren't partying or working. Yes, Einstein. Exactly. Yeah, I was thinking, wow, I was at the office last night thinking this is kind of like a party.
Oh, well. Well, it's going to be a party today because we got real fake games starting today. So the preseason games are going to start. So,
well, we know we actually had one last weekend, too. The first one was last week. Well, last Sunday.
Yeah. Okay. I saw it. You know, I was watching, but it didn't move me. How's that?
It didn't move you. It didn't move me. Muddy Waters reference. Wow.
Real fake games don't even move
you. You need a whole slate of them. You can't just have
like
the Baystars playing the Giants at Cellular Field of Okinawa, and that's that. Okay, yeah, good. You're a purist in that respect.
Right. And, stats are going to actually be taken, and they're going to be kept starting today for multiple teams, not just one. So, yeah, it feels more like today is the opening day of spring training games. So,
and the other thing is, of course, I tweeted about it was NPB's rosters are up.
Yes, I did see that, and I think I retweeted. I might.
Yeah,
have.
I was so excited.
That's right. It was the jerk. The new phone books are here. The new phone books are here.
Indeed, that's how I feel. Okay.
All right. So, as you probably many of you know, I did go to Okinawa between February 8th and 9th, and I've been watching as many team broadcasts as humanly possible while working, and these camp broadcasts. At first, I thought, who would watch something like this? But they're informative. It helps you prepare and at least learn about the teams and the players and how they're – you get to see what they're doing. You get to learn the circumstances. So they are – I mean, I don't know how those guys do a broadcast of – here we're going to have pitching practice for 5 hours. They're awesome.
Well, they had a – I was watching the Dragons one day, and basically I have a list of players I want to watch. Mm-hmm. And so Takaya Ishikawa is batting. And then the Dragons decide, it's time to cut to our Dawala signs autographs for fans segment.
Oh, no, shoot to kill.
I'm like, you could have done the mascot while Takahashi was batting. I've seen him.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Shoot to kill. Anyway. We're having a good time here, but we've got a lot to do on this show. On this week's show, we've got chats with Hanshin newcomer Justin Bohr and fourth-year Baystars lefty Edwin Escobar. We're going to look at some camp highlights, talk about the passing of Katsuya Nomura, and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging. All right, so as I said, I went to camp for the second year in a row, and this is unprecedented for me because I went long, long ago. I don't remember what year it was, and then I didn't go for more than a decade, and now 2 years in a row I've been able to go. So that was fun. And man, have you rented a car recently in Japan? They have these things called, well, first of all, you know how you used to have to plug in the address to where you wanted to go?
Okay.
When you rent a car in the Navi, in the car navigation system. Now, you only really need the phone number, but there are also these things called map codes. And all you do is it's like an 8 to 10 digit code. And you pop that in and you're done. You don't have to do the Japanese. You have to figure out how to read someplace or make sure you know how to read it.
Be hard in Okinawa.
It would be,
you're going to the Dragons camp. Yeah, you're going like, where is Nagatani? Yeah. You're going, and people are looking at you. Ask the locals. They're going, there ain't no such place.
It would read Kitatani, but who's counting? Hokutani.
Oh, Kitatani. Excuse me. My memory is poor usual.
Yeah, Nagatani. I know where that is. Actually, he says jokingly. Anyway, so I went, and it's made it really easy to go to these camps, and I just had the greatest time. I wish you were there. I wish somebody was there. I invited Jason, but Jason Nikoskery of the Japan Times, but he wasn't going, so I had to go out alone, and it was okay. It was fun. And well, so I got to talk.
Yeah,
to
I did. I was go. I was. The thing was, I had this interview that was potentially going to happen in Miyazaki, but it didn't. So basically, I was waiting for an interview that never happened. So I could never get my schedule right.
Blah 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 so, blah. Anyway, blah. Yeah, left me hanging.
I know. Yeah, that's poor all scheme. I know. Yeah, so that's like my version of the banging scheme. Oh, I did it, but I didn't.
Okay. Well, I'll try not to make any references to that because I'm still frustrated about the bank robbers who got to keep all the money and no punishment. Okay. But anyway, so I talked to a number of guys, but this week we'll have Justin and Edwin, and we'll have a couple more chats for you next time. So let's start with Justin Bohr. I went to talk to him on Sunday, the 9th of February. And Justin, he turns 32 in May. He played with the Marlins, the Phillies, and with Shohei Ohtani in the Halos last year. He has 92 homers in the majors. So he's got that body type that says he's a big bopper. And he does have a heavy swing. You always hear about guys who have a heavy ball, throw a heavy ball, but he looks like he has a heavy swing that when he makes contact, the ball's going to fly. The Tigers obviously want him to provide some power. We'll see what he is defensively at first base. I don't remember much about his first base abilities because I don't remember him. I do remember seeing him with the Marlins, but I know he didn't get a lot of run at first base for the Angels because they had Ohtani who was DHing and then they had Albert Pujols who played a lot at first base. So I don't remember seeing a lot. And plus, after a while, you get tired of watching the Angels lose. So when they came on TV, I really wasn't paying that much attention. So we'll see how he adjusts to playing. And I did see him make a nice play in a spring training practice game. So whatever that counts for. As for Edwin Escobar, I caught up with him on just after I went to talk to Hanshin Camp and talk to Justin. And I was walking out of the media/team entrance to the stadium there, and he was walking in, and we exchanged pleasantries. And then I said, hey, can you give me a few minutes? And he said, sure. And so we're standing right there in the entranceway as people are walking through, trying to push through. In fact, I saw Tyler Austin try to get through, and they were really nice and they didn't say, hey, move out of the way, but they were trying to get by and get their bats and stuff. And it was anyway, I was in such a rush that I didn't really give him a proper intro, but you'll hear a pause after Justin's talk. And then Edwin's voice is unmistakable. And at the end of the chat, you'll hear me reference his name. So now Edwin started his career with the Fighters 4 years ago and was traded midseason to DeNA. So this is going to be his third full season under Alex Ramirez, skippering at Yokohama. And last year, Edwin threw 75.1 innings and he had 88 strikeouts. And so I really think he's going to be an important guy and play an important role. And you'll hear him mention and reference his role. And he'll have to try to keep the heart rates down, fans like Michael Westbay and his skipper, Alex Ramirez, and just Bay Star fans everywhere because they have had some issues in the bullpen for a number of seasons, but I like what he has been doing and the work he has been doing. So hopefully he's gotten better in the off season. But anyway, let's take a listen to the chats. And we're with Justin Bohr of the Hanshin Tigers. Nice to meet you and welcome to Japan.
It's good to be here.
What made you choose NPB?
Well, this is actually something that's been a couple years in the making now. We started talking a little bit with the Tigers last year, and then the Angels came along and I ended up signing with them. So this has been a little bit of a elongated process, and I was able to do some homework on the Tigers and kind of Japanese baseball, so I feel like I got a pretty good feel of kind of what to expect.
Ooh, you hit some magic words there. You did some homework. What'd you do?
I talked to some guys that have been here before. Talked Casey McGee. He was a big help. Great guy. So he kind of gave me the heads up of what to expect and kind of the attitude to come here with. So he's seen guys have success and he's seen guys that didn't have success. So that was a huge help.
What else did you learn about the kind of baseball and some of the details that you learned? We always hear that guys come here and they say, they don't have fastball counts and they try to get you in with off-speed pitches here. And they really target the foreigners and they don't want them to beat them.
Yeah, I think that's kind of being a bigger hitter and a power guy, I feel like that's kind of sort of been the adjustment a little bit in the States as well, where pitching a little bit backwards, breaking balls early, even 3-0 counts aren't fastball counts anymore. So I'm hoping it's not going to be too much of a change, but I know there will be some adjustments that need to be made.
Now, what is it like getting ready to start a season so early in the year for you? How does that change your typical preseason?
Not too much. Obviously, the workload here in Japan is a little bit more for, you know, just the length of stretching and stuff like that. But I feel like they've done a great job in building us up, and then now we're getting at bats, and it sort of just feels like normal. It doesn't feel early anymore. It just feels like a normal spring training.
Okay. Now, guys always talk about getting their swing into form and all that stuff. Now, what does that mean for you?
For me, I feel like that's just not throwing away any at-bats. I think mechanically, I feel like I made some adjustments last year that I was able to take into this offseason, and I feel comfortable with where I am. So for me, it's more of a mental approach and, you know, at-bat to at-bat.
Okay. Now, what about the typical preseason? What do you try to work on during this time?
Normal preseason, it's, you know, first couple of days getting your legs underneath you, getting back onto the field, getting used to just obviously different time zone and all that stuff. And then now we're just, you know, progressing into games and live at bat, so it's just normal.
Okay. Now, what's something that has already caught you off guard? Oh, man, I wasn't expecting this kind of a thing.
Oh, man. Let's see. The one thing that's what caught me off guard was you don't change or shower at the field.
Mm.
You come to the field in your uniform. So that was a little bit different for me. Normally I'm used to being in street clothes and then going to the field and changing into my jersey, but it's I'm getting used to it.
All right, now you mentioned this a second ago that the amount of work is something you're not used to here in Japan. What do you think of when you see all these Japanese guys doing the running and the stretching and the hitting and how much they swing and how much they pitch right off the bat when spring training starts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously everyone comes to spring training ready to go and in really good shape. And, you know, these guys have great routines and, you know, obviously everyone's going to be ready for the season.
Now, how has the team expressed what expectations it has for you and in terms of a role and everything for you coming into the team?
That's something I think that comes along on its own. It's not really something that, you know, you address early in spring training. I think that's something that, you know, you earn everything you get in this game. So that's going to be a closer to the season type conversation.
Okay. Obviously, they want you to hit for power, or you're expecting to hit for power. And
yeah, I expect to just do what I do, and I think they're doing the same.
Okay. Now, so many hitters come to Japan and they kind of struggle with getting their timing against Japanese pitchers. What have you seen so far when you faced a little bit of live pitching here?
I haven't really seen too much yet.
Not too
so
much?
So I can't really give you a full rundown quite yet.
Okay.
So.
What have you seen with some of the pitchers on your team? You faced them in BP, right?
Yeah, very few. Just really a handful of guys. So not enough volume to be like, here's this or that.
All right, so in terms of you doing some research on the Tigers now, what did you find out, and what are you hoping to pull off this season?
So, I mean, obviously looking around, the fan base is unbelievable. From, you know, the time that I got off the plane to now, I mean, you got a dozen people just watching you run sprints every day, and then you got a stadium full of people watching you stretch and watching every single ball you hit. So that was one thing that, you know, you read about and the fans are great, but then it's another to come here and experience, you know, the passion that they have. So that was one, and then the other is an organization that wants to win, and they do win. So, you know, I've had some teams that were good and some teams that were bad, and I'm glad to be on a team that's, you know, projected to win a lot of games.
All right, so this last one, obviously you were compared already by, I think it was somebody on the news or in a newspaper somewhere, talking about you and Randy Bass, who's a legend in Hanshin's lore. How do you feel about those comparisons early on? You haven't even played a preseason game yet.
Yeah, obviously that's an honor to be compared to somebody who's obviously had a lot of success and is just revered as such a legend here. Obviously, I got to play some games first, but I hope to kind of form my own identity. So that's
all. All right. Well, we appreciate the time. Thanks a lot.
Of course. It's good seeing you.
All right. So tell me, how is this schedule so different this year from the previous year, because you guys are going to start on March 20th.
So yeah, this year is going to be more sooner than my first three seasons. So it's kind of difficult. I mean, at the same time, it's okay, but you need to get ready earlier because the season is about to start on the 20th, March. And by the same time, it's going to be more longer because season is going to be over close to November.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really tough right there. So, but we are here to work. You know, we are here to play. So we need just to enjoy.
Enjoy. Yeah. Okay. Now, you have a bunch of new foreign guys. You're missing Tsutsugo. He's gone. What's the atmosphere like with the new guys?
Yeah, no, we got two new guys. They're really good. You know, I think they're going to do it this year. You know, Tsutsugo left. You know, it's a big hole right there. But, you know, I think as a team, we're going to come out together. And we're going to do it. And, you know, hopefully we got a new captain, you know. So we'll see if he's going to step off and, you know, do it really good this year.
Now, you yourself, this is your fourth year. How does it feel to be coming into fourth year in NPB?
It feels really nice, you know. I feel like you belong to here, you know. It's 4 years. So, seeing familiar. And, you know, I feel like really comfortable because coming back to a season, it's like, you know everybody. I mean, you don't expect something new because you've already been here. So, you know, I'm happy to be back.
Now, what about your role this year? Is that going to change any? Are you going to close out the eighth inning? Are you going to be a seventh inning? Have you been told?
You know, I don't know yet. I feel like I'm going to be, you know, the utility man right there. You know, cover some 16 or 7 or 8. I think even when Yamasaki needs some day off, I'm going to be there too.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they told me, you know, I'm going to be there. No, and I like it because, you know, I like to help the guys, so I'm going to be ready for any situation.
Now, it seems like the media loves to focus on a rookie each year, and for you guys, it's Mori at short. What have you seen from him so far?
You know what? I haven't seen him yet. He's not here. He's in the minors.
Right.
But I haven't seen him yet. No, I'm not going to lie to you. I know I haven't seen him yet. But, you know, he's a shortstop, and I think what people say, he's really good, you know. So I think they're going to come in. Oh, they were here yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So, boy, I didn't see him
but
play.
You didn't see him.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I knew you guys were working out together a little bit.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just wish the best for him, you know, and come here and show us what he got.
Well, shortstop is a good, important position for a pitcher.
Yeah, you know, that's my best man right there for combination double plays. And, you know, I think he's going to get an opportunity to come here, you know, and be a good player.
Okay. All right, well, good luck. Stay healthy.
Thank you, man.
We'll be watching.
Appreciate it.
All right, Edwin Escobar. Thank you, man.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate Take care of yourself.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for taking the time to be on. In fact, with Justin, you know how always pleasant and helpful the Hanshin Tigers PR staff can be. And actually, I didn't see a lot of their PR staff that day, but one of the persons who was working.
I find that's the best way for the Hanshin Tigers
is,
PR staff to be helpful and pleasant.
Hashtag high heat.
Well, anyway, I did. I moved into an area because one of their, I don't know, I asked the guy if he was PR and he said no, but he said if anyone from the PR department kind of sees you talking in this area, they'll probably try to discourage you from doing interviews here. So Justin and I kind of hid away in a spot.
I think we've all got our Hanshin Tigers PR sort of like subterfuge story.
But yeah, I didn't see. In fact, one of the guys who used to be in the PR department, I bumped into, and he recognized me, and we were chatting. And he said, "Yeah, but I don't work in the PR department anymore." And I thought, "Oh, well, that's why you're taking the time to say hi to me, because you don't have to be mean anymore."
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've had that look like, This guy is a potential enemy.
Right, right. Conflict. So anyway, what left an impression on you?
Well, first of all, I want to give you give John a shout out, because the question about where you ask him about how they pitch the foreign hitters, you know, and I'm thinking, I could hear in your voice that you just left enough of that tone of that whining complaint, like, they don't pitch me like I'm supposed to be pitched. Who told them this is not baseball? You know, I mean, Bob Horner wrote a whole monologue about how Japanese people don't play baseball because they didn't throw him fastballs when he wanted to.
Okay.
So that was brilliant. I mean, it was just subtle enough. And it was a work of art on your part. Now, the other thing,
whining, a work of art. All right. Excellent.
Well, it wasn't whining, though. It was subtle. It was beautiful. So the other thing is about Justin was interesting. I guess two things. One, this is a guy who's not going to make stuff up. Now, we get a lot of people who just love to talk. Oddly enough, that John and I would talk to people who
you would know.
It takes one to know one, dude. Okay. And some of them just like they so much want to be helpful that they just kind of, you know, whatever comes to mind comes out.
Right.
And I get the feeling like with Justin, it was very matter of fact. I can't judge that. I haven't seen it. I don't know. I don't have the evidence. A little bit of talking to Mr. Data. But so that was good. That's always nice. And the other thing is the one where, but you could also tell that he's also ready to give you he may be ready to give us the platitudes. You know, all the guys are good. You know, he's got the zealous Wheeler button. You know, on his recording, it says, yeah, they're all good.
Yep.
Who have you faced? Have you liked? Oh, everybody's quality. Okay. Enough of that.
Yeah. Who stands
sorry.
Up?
Everybody sorry, Z. Yeah. But that's what happens to me. You be positive and somebody dumps on you.
Right. Yeah, it does. So, I could see that right away. He didn't really want to get into the details of what he had learned pre-arrival and that preparation that he talked about. But he did say that he'd done it. You know, Casey McGee is a great point of reference to gather information before you come to Japan, because he had success, but because he played in different organizations as well, because you've always talked about that. Well, you know, this is the only organization I know, so it's really good. No, Casey played
in
a couple, so he knows what's going on in that respect. So, but, you know, I got the feeling, because obviously it had only been a week since he had been in training camp, but, you know, he said it seemed like a regular training camp. Well, yeah, sure. At that point, it's just a week, but my sense was that as the length and the scope of the spring training season in Japan catches up to him, then he'll say, you know, this has really been a long time. And by the time the season starts and he realizes he's been, because a lot of these guys arrived, I don't know exactly what date he arrived, but a lot of these guys came or arrived in Okinawa like a couple of days before camp opened.
That's typical. Yeah, the Japanese players usually, the rookies will show up in Okinawa like the 5th or the 6th,
right.
But most of the regulars are showing up by the 17th or 18th. And the guys coming from overseas, they'll have the welcome press conferences 2 days before camp starts.
Yeah, so and some of the guys you say get there early. So I think after he gets here and sees how long the marathon really is, then it'll catch up with him. So I mean, I took that to be, well, okay, you just got here. That's probably a bad question.
Well, I'll tell you the one thing, one of the things that's confusing, and I thought about it yesterday as I was writing, or the day before when I was writing something, that the stories are now coming that teams have ended camp. This is going to throw a lot of the guys off. It's like, hold on a second. It is the 21st of – it's the 20th of February, and the season opens on the 20th of March. What are we supposed to be doing between now and then? Camp's over.
Right, right.
And then 3 weeks from now, after they end camp, players are going, we're still doing spring training.
Right.
You know, it's one of those sort of – it's one of those language disconnects, because in Japan, they pretty much – the preseason starts after spring training is over. They play practice games. They play intra-squad games.
They just play around. Yeah, I liken it to some of the marathons that I've done before where – before the start, I'd see these little skinny dudes running around trying to get warmed up. And I'm like, man, I am saving every step I can take for the course.
Right.
A fit guy like me, I'm not running around before the race. I will warm up on the way to the finish line. And so I think, that's what we're seeing. And then, some of these first year imports, I think that's just what the experience is, that first time of just not knowing. And so we'll see how that goes along. And in terms
exactly.
Of-
yeah. Well, it's going to be fun to catch up with these guys. You know, I used to almost avoid talking to people so early in camp because they really haven't seen enough to form valid opinions.
Right. Right.
And it's generally been my policy also with rookies, because I don't do enough amateur baseball that I have valid questions to ask them about, you know, where they, you know, to make that connection.
Right.
So basically, what are they going to say? I just got here.
Right.
You know, so I generally give that a rest until later. But this is good because we'll have a baseline to work from.
Certainly. Yeah. And like I said, I was just saying, what is it like? I mean, my question, I think, was how does it feel to have to be ready to be at this point this early in the year on the calendar? But I don't, maybe it was a bad question. But anyway, what about Edwin?
Well, Edwin's always positive. And I was thinking as I was listening to it, I was thinking that I first met Edwin like his first day in camp with the Fighters. In 2016, I went down to talk to Shohei Ohtani and Luis Mendoza, Chris Martin, and Edwin Escobar were there. And Ipe Mizuhara then was the foreign interpreter. So the now world famous Ipe Mizuhara was interpreting for the foreign guys.
Yeah, he showed Shohei Ohtani's
interpreter now, right? Ohtani's, so anyway, he was hanging around them, and then he said, like, when we get started, he said, like, oh, I can split. I don't even have to babysit you guys no more. Good.
That is funny.
Don't forget, I got you the wine, Ipe, so no right. guff from you. Okay, so anyway, we're talking, and I didn't have Edwin Escobar on my list because he had just arrived. In fact, he signed like on the 10th of February, and I didn't have him, and I couldn't remember his name. Paulton Garcia. And then as I'm leaving the stadium, and Edwin's just Edwin. He's like just the nicest guy in the world.
Really?
Or you know, as nice as anybody you're going to meet. And as we're walking through the stadium on my way out, Ipe says, Garcia.
Riving, yeah.
Yes. So I just love Edwin, and it was nothing unusual from him. We're all positive. Everything's good. I'm going to try to help the team.
Yeah, I mean, I just could hear how comfortable he was with the whole camp situation, with the team, with NPB. I love how he called himself the utility pitcher, and that he could be pitching anywhere from the sixth to the ninth innings, and he'll be available.
Well, they had him start. I think they had him start one at least a couple of games with the Bay Stars as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and I think that's really an effective weapon. That will be a great weapon for Alex Ramirez to employ, and hopefully, you know, Yasuaki Yamasaki doesn't need help in the ninth inning, but. I imagine we'll see a lot of games like we saw last year where they have to build their way through those late inning situations that latter third of the game and try to get through the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings with some close situations.
I think sometimes they were thinking, can we call the Lego store and build a reliever?
Right. And keep all the water coolers away from Spencer Penn.
I was wondering when you were going to hit that.
But I also wanted to highlight his length of the season comment, because we're going to have a high heat question about it later on. And we'll formally address it then. But the season opens early, obviously, with the March 20th start. But I looked at the schedule last night, and for some reason there's a Central League game scheduled between the Dragons and the Giants on October 17th. So that's really, really deep into October. And you've got the CLCS and PLCS playoffs ready to start, or set to start, on the 24th. And we've got about a month long break for the Olympics. It's really going to be a long season. And that really, I think, when you talk about the marathon, you're talking about one of the ultra marathons now. I think they bumped it up to, like, instead of, it's usually 42 kilometers plus, it's like a 50 kilometer run.
Yeah, we'd be seeing players like with those water packs on their back.
That's right. So, yeah,
they're quitting after 26 miles. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but anyway, thanks to those two guys. Thank you very much for the time. It was fun for me to talk to them. I've got another couple of chats for you guys next time we do a show. So, look forward to that. Let's make a four-seam transition and talk about, well, maybe it's a two. It's seamless. This is a seamless transition because we're just talking about camps and we just got two interviews from camps. So it's a seamless transition. So what are some of the things that I know you've been writing? You've been very prolific in writing about camp notes every day. What has really caught your eye so far?
Prolific is a nice way of saying just, like, you know, blowing hot air. But I'll take it.
You can't. With your fingers being that busy, it has nothing to do with air.
Okay.
Smarty fingers.
Carpal tunnel. I'm on my Hiroshima carpal tunnel exercises, I suppose.
Okay.
Now, I guess one of the things that I didn't write about every day is Roki Sasaki. And I'm thinking, this guy needs a nickname because, first of all, he's news when he breathes. It's like
whether he does or doesn't. Yes.
Well, if he doesn't, it's news. But when he does, it's like Sasaki breathed outside the bullpen but didn't go in today.
Right.
You know, and his catcher said, "I've never heard anybody breathe quite in such a special fashion."
Of course.
We had the great quote. It didn't get I just did a scouting report yesterday, so I didn't do any camp stuff, but I was thinking about it because the Tatsuhiro Tamura, the Marines regular catcher, caught Sasaki in his third bullpen the other day, and he said, like,
don't mess it up.
Well, he had a couple of them, actually. He said, "If I blank, he's going to kill me. And it's not because I'm not paying attention, it's because the ball's going to hit me and take my head off."
All right.
He had another one, too. I mean, he had a bunch of them lines. Yeah, I'd better not sneeze. I'd better not look away. I'd better not do anything.
Yeah, that's the one I like. He said the ball gets there in an instant, and if you happen to sneeze at the same time the ball is coming, you could die.
Yep. So yeah, we'll be looking out for Mr. Tamura's health this year.
Well, not only him. Did you hear what?
Exactly.
Yeah. The a backup catcher, Tomoyo Kakinuma, said he'd never caught anyone like Sasaki, and he said every pitch he threw was superb. And then, did you hear what Masato Yoshii, the pitching coach, said?
He never seen anybody throw as well as he had.
Well, yeah, he said, this is a guy who's gone and pitched in the major leagues, and he said he had never seen a guy throw a ball like he can. And I thought,
and this is a guy who coached Shohei Ohtani. Yeah. I'm thinking, like, okay. Yeah, so maybe he learned a little bit in New York that wasn't about baseball, but more like about exaggeration.
Well,
but the thing with Sasaki is, and I've written, is that he does throw harder than anybody in Japan now, but he hasn't thrown that hard yet.
Mm-hmm.
It seems. I mean, he's been throwing about mid-90s stuff. But the thing is that his delivery is so effortless looking that it's amazing he can generate velocity. I mean, his follow through and his deceleration is very casual looking.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, and obviously we haven't seen any serious throwing. I mean, he just had a catcher squatting to throw to recently. Otherwise, everybody's been standing. So, yeah, he hasn't been full on, you know, trying to fire it in there. And I saw an interview where someone said, you know, his balance is really good and his finish and his follow through. Yeah. And so he has been coached well, and he's actually, he still hasn't graduated from high school. I think the graduation ceremony is coming up soon. And he still hasn't filled out. I mean, he filled out a little bit, it seems, from the last time we saw him. If TV can tell you anything.
Right.
But,
here's the thing is that the day I last wrote about him was the day the Nikon Sports ran a story that said Sasaki does not throw.
Right.
And Yoshi said, you know, coach says this is normal. Don't panic. And so Yoshi said, no, it was his weight training day. So he wasn't throwing, but you know, that was a good sign because I wasn't familiar. The Marines were one of the teams. I didn't know whether they actually required their players to do weight training.
Mm.
Yeah. Because some of the teams don't. Some of the teams, they say, if you want, we'll help you, but we're not going to intervene.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So far, it's about half of them by my count.
Well, yeah. Essentially,
I'm glad the Marines aren't one of them.
Yeah, he's still really young and still has. He's got a frame that you can build on here, and I just, you know, hope they take it slowly. But he did in an interview say he's hoping at some point he can be the first person to hit 170 kilometers per hour with a pitch, which would be the equivalent of 105.6 miles an hour. And I can tell you this, he's gotten a lot of drool-filled praise from everybody, from manager to...
Yeah, pretty much. His stuff on the internet, your computer has to come with kind of a wipe, you know, to sop up the extra moisture from the stories.
Yeah, yeah. It's I think Tadahito Iguchi, the manager, has already hinted that he's considering Sasaki to start on opening day. I wouldn't be surprised, but then again,
I would be surprised.
Then again, I might be. Yeah, it just depends. So,
yeah.
Okay. For me, I think.
How about you?
We besides Sasaki, everybody's all over that. Tyler Austin of the DNA, Daystars is
Tyler
has been bopping, but I refuse to even tweet about these practice games. They've been beyond fake. So I mean, you know, the guys are just throwing stuff, and we've seen it here a lot. Horner comes to Japan, has really good early on spring training / preseason, and then the games start. And so I just think he, you know, I messaged Alonzo Powell, the coach, the hitting coach, who's going to be first team, farm team hitting coach for the Dragons this year. And he said, yeah, well, you know, he's doing what he's supposed to do, which is if you get those pitches, you need to hit them. And I remember we talked about the fact that players have come here in the past and said, hey, look, don't hold anything back from the start. You know, you need to prove that you can play. So these things are good, but it's so early that, you know, it's nice to see him do that. With the Tigers, Justin Bour, Jerry Sands, those guys have not really hit home runs and they've had some swings. So, you know, a couple singles here for both of those guys, but nothing big yet. So it's really nice to see that. And obviously with Yoshitomo Tsugo gone to the major leagues, there's a spot open in the outfield. So at least one. If you're going to be productive, that's going to get you a spot early on. So I just hope for the sake of the Bay Stars that he can continue.
Yeah. I mean, I did hear as soon as I heard that, I remember Gabe Kapler and, and Wayne Grassick, and Gabe Kapler just lit up spring training, and he did I did interview him 2 weeks into spring training one year, and You know, he was going to be the spark plug for the Giants. You know, he was hustling all over the place, and then he kind of took the foot off the pedal when he went into the regular season. I'm ready to go, and then I got one of Wayne Grassick's like lectures about how the Japanese pitchers basically go out of their way to set up the new foreign hitters and make them think they're succeeding in spring training, like throwing them. It's not so much that as that they pretty much none of your league's pitchers are going to throw you anything that they want to save for the season.
Right.
So they'll throw you the pitches they're working on. They're going to throw that changeup that they're not going to throw anywhere within 10 feet of the batter's box you're standing in, and they're going to be throwing that one down the middle of the plate to see if they can, you know, learn how to command it.
Yep. Well, so, some of the pitches Tyler has hit have not been that difficult to hit.
No.
I mean, no. I say that sitting and watching.
I say that TV. I couldn't hit him.
I couldn't hit him, but yes. So it's all relative, like you said. Also, indeed. Keito Mori, the rookie for the Bay Stars, I think we've talked about him on the previous show as well, and he continues to get rave reviews, even though Edwin Escobar said he hadn't seen him yet, because he's mostly working with the second team. And I fully expect, you know, I can see a scenario in which Mori is playing, opens the season on the farm, and Yamato Maeda, who probably will start at short for the Bay Stars, doesn't do anything spectacular. He's steady defensively, and then maybe he has an owie, whether contrived or real, and Mori gets a shot to come up and gets to play for a week, and then they see how he does. But he's a rookie straight out of high school, and obviously they need someone productive at the shortstop spot. I think a team with playoff aspirations automatically defaults to the veteran shortstop, but I could see Mori getting some everyday time on the farm. And if he does well, maybe getting a call up, even if Maeda doesn't get injured, just because they want to see what he does.
And knowing Alex Ramirez as little as I do, when he thinks Mori is ready, and Mori's played in a few games and he thinks he can handle the disappointments, probably before he thinks he can handle the disappointments, if he thinks Mori's the guy, there'll be Bay Stars fans who will forget what Yamato Maeda's family name is in about 10 days, because they won't ever be, you know, they'll be trying to put his face on the back of milk cartons.
Right. And your name is
the people know me as Yamato, but my last name is Maeda, so that's the go to the police box reporting missing.
All right.
I don't mean to be mean, because that's not Alex doing that, because he knows everybody he's got and all the tools he's got. But my point is that when he commits to a player, even if it's a player the team tells him is not the guy who has a future. He's like, he reminds me a lot of Bobby Valentine in that respect. No. This is the guy I want. Right. So that has happened before in the past, and I suspect that'll happen with Mori. Now, my thing with Mori that my hesitance about Mori is how much his defense improves. Because I was not sold on his defense from what I've seen, and I know that when he was with the national team in the under-18 World Cup last summer, he was playing center field. Well, I liked him in the outfield, but he short arms the ball when he throws it. He's got like a little shot put motion.
Oh, okay.
He's got a really strong arm, but so if they actually teach him how to throw, he doesn't do it in the outfield, but he does it shortstop. So I don't know. Maybe if they can fix that, then he'll be fine.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen much of him at all. So I'll make my assessments as we go along here. Like Edwin said, he has mostly been working out with the farm team. So that doesn't stop, you know, YouTube from putting the games on their practice games on up and showing them. But I can't, obviously can't sit through all that just to see one player. I usually try to watch the first team stuff. So, all right. Anything else?
The John's got standards, dudes.
Very high standards.
Actually, he's got time limits. He's only got 36 hours in a day. So
sometimes I wish, but then other days it gets some really long days in there. I don't need any more time. All right, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the passing of the great, legendary Katsuya Nomura, who died on February 11th of heart disease at 84. Obviously, I would call him the greatest catcher, and you said, I guess Shinosuke Abe is up there with him, but the greatest, the greatest catcher in NPB history. He finished second behind Sadaharu Oh on the all-time home run list with 657. He won 8 consecutive home run titles. This is a guy who really, I came to know him as a manager. You always, when you fall off the tomato truck or the cabbage truck or whatever truck you fall off of and start watching Japanese baseball and you see some old guy in the dugout, you really have no reference point from which to judge the guy. You just see some old guy barking in the dugout, and that's how I came to know Nomura as the manager of the barking, always barking, it seemed, manager of the Old Swallows when I came to Japan. And I think he just would have been a Hall of Famer simply on his managerial achievements alone. So when I found out that he was an industry changer as a player, then as a manager and color analyst, and I guess when he did TV, he's actually credited for bringing up the idea of predicting pitch sequence as well as a color analyst. So he just did a lot of things to change and move the game along. And it was a huge loss for Japan, not just the baseball world either. I think a national treasure was lost.
Yeah, he was something. He could be really, because he loved baseball, you know, he loved winning so much. Mm. That he could be really harsh whenever somebody, you know, took the foot off the pedal a little bit. When anybody ever looked like they were cruising, he had a really sharp, another thing about him is that he had a really sharp tongue and he was really witty. I mean, his brain wasn't just wired for baseball.
Right.
And he was so good at playing to the media. Well, if there was a camera around, he'd be making up lyrics. My brother Steve does this. He makes up lyrics for songs, for popular songs to fit the current situation. And he'd start singing about his first baseman who won't dive for baseballs, or something. Or about the opposing manager or something that he wants to criticize. He just did everything. He was just so multi-talented, and I'll keep it pretty small, but one of the things, so I too didn't get to see him play. He retired 4 years before I arrived in Japan. Mm-hmm. And I do remember him joining the Swallows as the manager in 1990. And I was a Swallows fan, so I got a good look at him. And I'll say this about his managing style, which was he basically was – he'd learned about data and using data to analyze the game from his Hall of Fame manager, Kazunda Tsuruoka. So he learned a lot, but he made – it's sort of like saying – well, I taught Greg LeMond how to ride a bicycle, because he became the master. And so his use of data analysis and his working on pitching patterns to his hitters and to opposing hitters was kind of a stuff of legend. And another thing that he did was it was a little a bit of a money ball thing. Mm-hmm. He'd take these veteran players who had talents that were undervalued, primarily on-base guys. Mm-hmm. And he built a bench full of guys who got on base. you know, he'd have one guy play, you know, who could play defense, but pretty much his bench players were all guys who could either run like the wind or could get on base. And at that time, when he was the manager, mm-hmm. pretty much every time a manager lost a game, somebody would say, why didn't you use the pinch hitter, your best pinch hitter? And he was saying, well, I was never in a situation where I could use a pinch hitter, because at that time, the pinch hitter was a guy who had was like a high average guy or a home run guy uh-huh. who you basically, his only job was to come up there and drive in runs. And Nomura used to have these guys, Eiji Kanemori was my favorite, but Tsutomu Wakamatsu, the Hall of Famer on his last legs, were guys who would get on base like a 400 on base percentage.
Right.
And so that's what I remember him. And he had his best years with the Yakult Swallows, his 4 Central League titles, his 3 Japan Series titles. It was just a glorious time.
Yeah, and I think he brought some ideas to the game. He's credited with developing the pitching slide step, because he was trying to figure out ways to slow down this base-stealing fiend named Yutaka Fukumoto. And he,
right, who was the Pacific League,
the
Lou Brock of Japan.
Yeah, so he asked his pitchers to give him an assist there by doing a slide step. Mm. And, you talked about his greatest managerial work being with the Swallows. He's also got Masahiro Tanaka on his path to greatness. And I did talk to Don Nomura, his stepson, and asked for a comment. And Don came back with, he followed through famously here with a great comment. So I'm going to read it as he wrote it. And it's not that long, but it does require you to pay attention for a little while. He says, Kantoku, or manager, as I've always called him, was a universe, limitless, timeless, endless, and flexible. He saw things people couldn't see, such as talent and moves and other things that we don't see in baseball. He was data-oriented from his playing days 60 years ago or more. He was a deep thinker, a great mentor. He never molds people, but he will find a way to get them molded in the most comfortable way. We don't usually use this language on the show, but he hated kiss asses, but he admired their talent and ability. He loved baseball. He loved his wife, Sachi. He loved, and baseball for many of us was everything to him. He was a dynamic person. He took me as a son, and I'm sure being a mixed race would have made things difficult, but he blinded everyone and proudly said, this is my son. I'll never forget that big-hearted man. I have so many things I want to write, but this is it for now. So thank you for Don Nomura for sending that comment. This is something he sent just for us. He's not just a baseball. Baseball helped make him famous, but he was a national treasure, I think. And that's why we see there's still, I mean, if you go on the YouTube and you just type in Japanese, Yakyu, the word for baseball, you get so many hits on Nomura.
Yeah.
I know it's still, you know, it kind of came as a shock, although I did see one of the news specials. There have been news specials on every channel multiple times, it seems. They did one, and they figured, well, that's not enough. And I think before you and I started the show, we said we could probably do a segment on Nomura on every show
yep.
for the podcast for the entire year and still not have enough time to get to everything that he meant to baseball.
I remember actually, I don't know if it was his last game as manager with the Rakuten Eagles, but it was one of the last games. It was in Chiba, and it was the night that Bobby Valentine managed his last game in Japan. And I didn't really think much about Nomura. There wasn't I shouldn't say that wasn't his last game, because he went into the playoffs in 2009, but it was about the end of the regular season for him. And it was just typical Nomura performance. He would, the thing that was fun about him is you could, you know, many managers in Japan can be act like they're, what's the word? They act like sometimes they're too important for the rest of the people in their vicinity.
Yes.
And no more presence. But here I was, my Japanese wasn't that good. It wasn't as good as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And even the first time I asked, I ever talked to Nomura when he was manager of the Hanshin Tigers, would have been about 2000. And I didn't know the rules and I was breaking the mm-hmm. rules, talking to the manager in a place where you're not supposed to be talking to the manager.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked me up and down like, this guy doesn't know the rules. What a loser. But then he smiled and he answered my question. And then he sort of waved me away, like, you know, don't get in trouble, kid.
Right.
So, but that was my introduction. But afterwards, as I got more comfortable with Japanese, I sitting and listening to he had the old manager's show on the bench before the Rock 10 Eagles games.
Mm-hmm.
And it would go on for about 90 minutes. So basically the beat reporter would say, do you remember this guy when? And Nomura would say, oh, let me tell you a story about that guy.
Right.
I mean, it was like going to a saber meeting. I mean, they talk about the Eagles team, you know, and what was going on, the standard, you know, they could get through with that stuff in about 5 minutes. And then for 85 minutes, they'd be talking about the old days and about players he'd seen and people he'd seen and celebrities he knew. It was wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to miss him. And again, thank you very much to Don for sending that.
Yeah. Thanks, Don.
Special note for us. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And actually, the week after we lost Nomura, the baseball world lost Tony Fernandez. Now, he played in 2000 with the Seibu Lions just 1 year, but he hit 327, 74 RBIs, and he had complications from kidney disease. So it's just been a rough year already early on with the passings of some prominent people in the sports world. But we power on. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one comes from our buddy Dragon Soul in Brisbane, Australia, and he sent in an email, and he wanted to point out, I'll just read it. He said, just thought I'd nitpick regarding the podcast. Morimichi Takagi was the second Mr. Dragons. Michio Nishizawa was the first, and he said he loved the anecdote about Morimichi Takagi fighting with Hiroshi Gando in the dugout. So he appreciated that. So, yeah, I guess I was speaking from my own, having fallen off the tomato truck when I went to Nagoya in 1990.
I was waiting to see if we were getting a new vegetable
something I don't like. I couldn't wait to get off that truck, obviously. Do not like tomatoes. But anyway, so yeah, thank you for that. So Dragon Soul said he had a question. So he says, I've been pawning over the rosters ahead of the new season, and I've noticed that some teams use development of player contracts almost excessively, while others barely give them a second thought. And I know the Hawks and the Giants have a second farm team that is made up mostly of developmental players, but what is the philosophy regarding those deals for the Marines, Buffaloes, and Dragons? And could other teams make better use of these deals? Jim?
Well, the developmental player system, I'm curious how it came about, but long story short,
yes.
Basically, good luck with that one. Okay, the developmental contract players have lower minimum salary. You're getting about I think the minimum salary is 2.4 million yen, which is about $22,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't play on first team games. That's basically their limit. They also don't count against a 70-man roster. So if you're a team that's got deep pockets, if you're the Hawks and Giants who have well over, you know, they have close. Between them, they probably have close to 60 developmental players.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all the other teams in NPB probably have about 15
mm-hmm.
put together.
Right.
And as far as I know, the Fighters still have never had one. or maybe they had one last year for the first time. I think they use them for roster flexibility mostly. They use them for signing. A lot of the teams now will use them to add foreign players to the roster to give them extended tryouts in the farm leagues. Yeah.
Well, the Fighters have about, I don't know, I'm looking here, I've seen six guys this year.
Oh, okay, that's new, because for a long time, right, the team policy was not to have any. But I think it's such a useful thing, because now basically the only rule about the farm team, the developmental players, is after 3 years on a developmental contract, you can no longer reserve them. You have to put them on the open market.
Oh.
I don't know if you can re-sign them to a developmental contract or not. So you can't keep them forever. But as far as other teams making better use of them, yes. Well, who can say, well, I've made maximum use of anything?
The Giants.
I mean, who can say, well... Well, you're good at writing, but who can, you know, how can you not become better?
Right, right. I look at the second team farm system and developmental players as a money situation. I know you have to look at the human element as well, but teams have to weigh the notion of spending like billions of yen to find one or two gold nuggets every other year, maybe. And maybe one star over the course of a decade, because that's all we've really seen. We haven't seen great players consistently come out of this system. So what you're doing is you're pouring a lot of money into a system that you hope will produce, you know, very little. And so I don't think a lot of teams are interested in that. And that's why I think Jim pointed out to the teams that have a lot of money, because it requires a lot of money and unwavering organizational wide philosophy to execute your plan. And I don't think, you know, for example, and I hate to pick on this particular organization, but it's true. When you look at the Oryx Buffaloes, do you see anything consistent that you can say, okay, we can implement this and have it work throughout the organization, including a second tier of the farm system? And I'm just not seeing that with that club. I don't see that. I mean, newspapers, other than the Yomiuri, like Chunichi, they're going to be struggling. They're not going to spend a lot of money. So you talked about Dragon Soul asked specifically about the Marines and the Dragons and the Buffaloes, and I think those, he pointed to teams that are really going to be conserving whatever resources they can conserve and pump them back into the two tiers of the teams that they have now instead of trying to create another tier. Mm-hmm. So although I think Molte has more money than we suspect, but I don't think they're interested.
And Oryx also, Oryx is an odd fish to be. I mean, the Dragons are certainly, because of they're in the newspaper business. They're really probably in terms of spending, they have high expectations. They have a large devoted fan base, and they represent a huge city that they have the market to. But in terms of money, they don't have a lot of money outside from the ball club.
Right.
Whereas Oryx, if the Oryx Buffaloes were to become a hot item, mm-hmm. their company has so much financial resources that they could turn that team into a cash cow.
It doesn't seem like they have that. Yeah, that's their focus.
I don't think that. Well, I mean, look. If you gave the Oryx Buffaloes front office your car and let them drive around in for a couple of years, would you say these are guys I want handling a Ferrari? I don't think so.
You might find it in a ditch somewhere, flipped over.
That's right. You're saying you guys know about Uber. So some of the teams, the Lions and the Carp,
mm-hmm.
have expanded, and they have third teams now. The third teams basically play amateur clubs. I would say that the Giants had two. The Giants haven't been big on the developmental issue, but Tatsunari Hara took two guys from the developmental contracts. They weren't on developmental contracts very long, but they were signed on them because they were extras.
Right.
You know, they were afterthoughts. Yes. And Tetsuya Matsumoto and Tetsuya Yamaguchi both became rookies of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Yamaguchi went on to have a great career. Kodai Senga and Takeo Kai for the Hawks. Takeo Kai, I think, was the last guy taken in the 2010 draft. He may have been the last developmental player taken, and he's their starting catcher. So,
and a star, yeah. He's reached stardom.
And a star, right. Yeah. So, and Kodai Senga is their best pitcher. So it's certainly, if you have the money to sign them and if you have a plan, and the Hawks certainly more than anybody have a plan. And I'm not doing this because the Hawks like to hear me say nice things about the Hawks. I'm saying it's true.
Right. And another thing to remember, I mean, you have to have a plan. You can't just stick these guys. You can't say, well, we're going to have a third team and we'll get some guys together and hopefully somebody will emerge from there as a player we can use. Player development is not just putting a bat or a ball in the guy's hand and saying, go work on X, Y, and Z, and we'll see you later. It's you know, more complicated. It takes core values in terms of what your organization wants to do. It takes money. It takes time. It takes patience. And you have to give these guys coaching. In fact, I would venture to say you have to put your best coaches down on a team that, if you had a third team, to help develop the players, because those are the guys who need it the most. You know, you could argue that aspect. I don't know. It depends on your philosophy. But I mean, if you've got good players, they don't need as much coaching, you would think. But maybe you need sharp eyes. I don't know. But it just isn't a very simple, we want to have a third team because we want to have developmental players and we think it's going to help our team in the long run. You have to have a strategic
plan. They certainly have enough minor league players to have third teams. And I think that if the current 12-team system stays in place, I think we'll see another tier of minor league competition between the pros at some kind that is not – that's more than the third team. Let's play college and independent minor league teams.
Yep. Okay. Our second question comes from Igoru, and I think he's in the Kansai area. Where are you? You've got to tell us where you live. And he hit us up on Twitter, and he's very excited about Adam Jones and the Buffaloes, and he's a Buffaloes fan, and very excited. He says, I think my Oryx Buffaloes will be the surprise team this season. Adam Jones, this addition is a great boost for our young team. Yoshinobu Yamamoto can be even better this year. I doubt that. My only worry is Tokyo 2020, the Olympics. How will that stop affect this season? So you got to go first last time. I will start this time. I would assume, because I went back and looked at a few schedules a few years back, and I don't recall seeing a break that's almost this long ever. Since I've been here, but I didn't really always pay attention. So I don't know. Have you seen a break that's going to be 3+ weeks in the middle of the season?
Well, in the 2002 World Cup hosted in Japan, Soccer World Cup, the teams were basically off for most of 3 weeks. You know, they had games, but they had fewer games.
All right. So, and I was here for that.
And I remember asking, Scott Sheldon of the Oryx Blue Wave then. And I said, well, what are you going to do when there's no baseball? He says, man, he played soccer at Rice University. So he's going, I'm going to be watching soccer.
Right,
man.
Right. So the games stop after the All-Star Series on July 18th and don't restart until August 14th. Yeah, I remember the 2008 Beijing games. We saw a short break and the Samurai players just left and went and played and came back and all that stuff.
Right. Well, they had a break for the Olympic baseball tournament.
Right. But it wasn't this
one. But here they're breaking for the whole Olympics.
So, I don't know. This is probably 90% of the players in the league in NPB will be out of action during this time. So my guess is the fast starter type players will rebound really quickly when they come back. The older players, the injured guys, and the young struggling players will have time to have a lot of positive time off, I guess. They'll use the break in a positive way. Some of the guys who have really gotten going will not want the break. I think last thing Millage once told us on JBW, baseball is meant to be played every day. So this is really hampering it. So I reached out to Zach Neal of the Sabre Lions, who's recently named the opening day starter, and asked him, you know, briefly give me your feelings about it. And he sent back an essay on his iPhone, I think. I mean, for an iPhone, it was pretty long, but some of the things, and I'll read some of it, but he says it just comes down to the impact of the length of the season, and that's what Edwin Escobar was saying. He says, we have now stretched the season a week sooner, and now almost 3 weeks later into the middle of October, so that effect, I think, will be the greatest, especially if a team makes the playoffs. So, yeah, now you're talking about finishing in November after having started in late January by arriving in Japan, right, if you're a foreign guy. So when you consider less rest and less time to rebuild strength and recover from the long season, the off season is an important time for that. And now we will have even shorter time. So he's saying even that this could impact the 21 season, which is something I didn't think about. Yeah. He says during the season, I could have a major, it could have a major impact. Say a team is on a roll and playing well. Now that team doesn't play a real MPB game for a month, and that could alter how they come back after the break, blah, blah, blah. You know, scrimmages aren't real baseball. The body doesn't go through the same stress and energy level that it would in a real game. And so he had those things to say about it. And I mean, my initial thoughts were, yeah, you've got some young players who probably would be huffing and puffing as they have to go sprint toward the finish line, and now they're going to get a month off to recover. So all the young players, all these rookies, you know, like Sasaki and maybe guys who won't be on the national team, get this time to just take a break, especially the mental break, and come back. So I suspect that some of these guys who are young players, it'll be like entering their second season almost after they come back, because all the lessons that they've maybe not been able to employ or make their bodies do, they'll have time to work on that stuff mid-season and come back. And I think it's going to have a lot of impact. We don't know is my answer. A lot of people have a lot of opinions, but I don't think we know. Jim, what do you think?
Well, two things. One is that the 2011 season lasted until the 20th of November because of the earthquake that forced the season to start a month late. And, you know, the Rockton Eagles didn't play their home opener until April 29th. They played games in Koshien and I think at the Kobe Greens, the ballpark used to be named Kobe Green Stadium. Yes. And so they have the experience doing that, but a month off. And here's the other thing that just occurred to me is if the Olympics had been held in 2019 instead of 2020, if there had been a month-long break last year, Yuki Inagita would be a free agent at the end of next year.
Service time.
Because of service time, right? Yuki Inagita fell about 5 days short of collecting a year for 2019.
Uh-huh.
Because the Japan Series games don't count.
Gotcha.
And because of that, he gave up on his dream to play in the majors and signed a 7-year deal. His plan was, his officially announced plan had been to finish the 2020 season and say, see ya. And then when the Hawks went to him with the numbers and said, sorry, dude, you know, that time we kept you on the farm team. You came back on the farm team on August 8th and you played and you said fine. And then we took a month to get you back to the first team.
Mm.
Well, geez, we should have calculated better.
Yeah, there are just so many wide sweeping just a huge.
But the other thing is, yeah. So if guys who are hurt, sure, 4 weeks off is going to be a godsend for them.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that was one of the first things I thought about. But yeah, I mean, you know, hitters have their rhythm. Pitchers have their rhythm. I would imagine, you know, the first week you're like, okay, well, I can rest the body. The second week, you're getting some mental rest and you're getting the physical work in. The third week, it's like, can we play? You know, and then finally into that fourth week, you're like, oh, I can't wait, you know, and lots of people are going to be itching to get back on the field. So, and I think it's, you know, we're going to see differences from that first half, but who knows? And it's not even a half because.
Well, here's the other thing. The minor leagues will be playing.
They're going to play. Wow. Well, you can go down and get some swings, I guess.
Exactly.
Team, so.
I think there'll be practice games. I think there'll be intra-squad games. During the earthquake, you know, before the earthquake, here was the weird thing. After the earthquake and before the delayed start of the season, teams were playing practice games. But they couldn't have fans because the teams didn't want to spend money on the stadiums, you know, on the security and the staff and the, you know, the people selling concessions,
right.
Clean up crews. So the teams are playing, but nobody was watching.
Of course.
I think we'll be some of that.
Yeah. There'll probably be a lot
We're
of
not
that.
Having games. Ignore us. Watch the Olympics.
Yes, that will be happening too. All right, so our plan right now is to take another weekend off next week and then start up. First preview show will be on the 9th. I think we have set the calendar in that respect. We will do the Central League first and then the Pacific League the second week, I think. Don't quote me on that. I can't remember anything. I've been really busy trying to plan all this stuff, but we are planning a big special for our prediction show. So stay tuned for that. The season opens up on the calendar, as we've been talking about, 9 days earlier than it did last year. And it's just going to be fun for now. But until then, enjoy your preseason games.
See you at the ballpark, whether there are people there or not.